Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
With the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this extra quarantine episode of Wake Up Hollywood. We're going to do another one, and we're going to bring back one of our favorite comedians, Mr. John DeCrosta. How are you, John?
Horrible. Again, horrible.
Looking promising right now, right?
No.
It's, you know, it's crazy because it's like, I was just having this conversation with another friend of mine. It's like, you know, if there are tears, you know, restaurants are doing bad, but any artist or creative person is really kind of like at the bottom of the barrel. It's like, whoa, what is happening? There are no clubs to play. There are no movie theaters to go see stuff. No comedy clubs open. It's crazy. It's crazy.
It is insane. And I actually have a T-shirt I was going to wear, but I couldn't find it. And it says on the shirt, 2020 is the year I found out I was non-essential.
Right. No, but it's the truth.
It is the truth. Anybody in the arts, anything, you know, the thing that troubles me the most is people really take entertainment for granted. Like, they are sitting in their homes, they're going to work, most everybody. People in the service industry are the ones hurting as far as in the regular world. But everybody's doing their job. They got their family. And they take movies, music, concerts, comedy clubs. They take it all for granted. And they don't think about how much this whole thing is impacting the entertainment industry, and that's across the board.
Yeah, I mean, it's Broadway, it's comedy clubs, it's music, it's movie theaters, it's, you know, playhouses. And you know what? If you take all that stuff away, what culture do you really have other than sitting at home and watching culture? You know what I mean? It's not the same. It's like really like understanding how great culture and social, you know, behaviors are. It's through all those mediums. So I totally feel you 100%. It's definitely a weird time, you know.
And you know, as a musician, and I've seen you perform many times, you know, I've been offered several Zoom shows and parking lot shows, and I've done a couple of each, and it doesn't even come close to the same thing.
Yeah, I totally agree.
It's
not a good substitute.
It's a horrible substitute. It's devastating. It's really devastating. And I know people on the performing side of any type of, performance end. And then I know so many people that own establishments that put on live entertainment, whether it be a musician or a comic or dancers or whatever the case may be. And it's devastating everybody. And, you know, Cirque du Soleil went bankrupt, for God's sakes. That's insane to me. Yeah. Cirque du Soleil has had shows, and I've been working Vegas 30 years actually almost 40 years, and they've been there. And to know that they went bankrupt is just mind-blowing.
It's mind-boggling. And it's also, they were on cruise ships now too. They were in Vegas and all the, casinos. They were still doing tented shows. So it's just unbelievable that, all of that's folding. It's sad to see Broadway dark, like New York is Broadway, is so much of the soul of New York. So to see that dark, when I drive on the Sunset Strip and see all those music clubs, they're all closed. The Troubadours having problems. I mean, I just don't know what the future of music festivals, clubs, comedy clubs, all of that stuff. I see it on all sides. It's like you said, I have friends that run clubs or venues and they're just pulling their hair out. They're like, we don't know how to, I don't know if it's a reinvention or if it's just like everybody has to be vaccinated or if it's like every person has to be 6 feet apart and it's like, smaller room shows. Were you on any of the cruise ships when things went down? Because I know you were doing a lot of cruise ship tours. Right?
I was on as of a year ago, 90% of my income was generated on performing on cruise ships. And I was on a ship March 16th of last year or of this year. And I got off a ship on March 16th in Charleston, South Carolina. That was my last show on the 16th. And I got off. I flew home on the 17th. I have not performed since then. And it's funny because I was on a ship and 2 or 3 days before we were sent home, I was scheduled to go home on that day anyway. But I was going to another ship. I was going to a ship here in Long Beach. And there was news press conferences with the cruise industry and other cruise lines that I do not work for said, we're done. We have to shut down. And my line was like still going. And I'm like, it's a matter of days.
Right.
And then I said, I guarantee within a day or two, we're going to be sent home too. And in the middle, I work for Carnival, and we do 2 family shows and 3 adult shows for every group of passengers. And I, on this particular night, had a family show, and then later on that evening, I had an adult show. And in the middle of the family show, the entire ship was notified. It's over.
We're docking at the next stop.
Yeah, when we pull in on the 16th or this morning of the 17th, we're done. We're not taking on any passengers. They're all being sent, any type of refund or whatever. I don't know any of that side of the whole story, but all I know is when I got off stage on the 16th after my first of 2 shows that night, the sound tech said, the email came, we're done. And I'm like, but Nikki, it was one of those things that I said to myself, all right, well, okay. So we take 4 or 5 weeks off and, right, regroup. This is just insanity.
Right.
That, we've been pushed back we're into February now. As far as
starting
they've
up.
Made it, they've made a decision. Nothing's going to happen until February 1st. Now that's tentative. That could change again next week. So my point is, if we're not going till then, I'm going to go a full year without shows. Now, some comics are performing in different clubs here and there at 25% capacity. I know my pal Brad Garrett opened up back in Vegas. He couldn't open up his real room downstairs. Because in Vegas, there's a rule that you have to have 25 feet between the performer and the audience. And that's literally almost the depth of the club. So they're upstairs in the the banquet facility now, like where you would hold a wedding or whatever, and the tables are really spread apart. They went 3 weeks and they closed them down this week again. Wow. So it's just, but I refuse to accept that this is forever.
Right. It's not forever. I
refuse to use the term new normal because I feel it's the now normal.
Right.
You know, you and I are both LA sports fans. I mean, we know about the brand new Rams Stadium. I can't imagine that thing never being filled.
I can't believe that it's finished. It's finally finished. Nobody can go in. That's a curse. You know, it's like, and it's such a beautiful stadium. I've seen it on TV. I've seen all the tours. And it's like, can't even go in and watch a game. It's such a weird.
It was awful not being able to celebrate the Dodgers victory this year.
I know. And the Lakers too, man.
Lakers. You
know what? But it was like Lakers and Dodgers. You know what? Even if it came at that expense for them to win, at least they have that. But I mean, it was very strange for them to celebrate in an empty stadium.
Yeah.
It just sat, you know, it's like, yeah. it's a weird time, but mind you, I see, tell me a little bit about your your friend behind you that I've seen some videos you've been doing.
That's actually Gino Rezzoni. He's guarding my gumball machine at the moment.
You've been doing some cooking shows with him, right?
No, that's Alfredo.
Oh, okay.
That's Alfredo. Alfredo Fettuccini. He's starting. That's the whole thing. Is I've kind of not sidestepped, but I don't want to use the term avoiding, but I'm still trying to remain creative and produce product and social media content. So I had in my head for years the idea of this chef puppet. I love to cook. I cook all the time. And I had this idea of creating just a little cooking type quick show, not a 30-minute or an hour, just like a 5 to 10 minute cooking thing. And I did one episode so far. I'm working on another one within the next 2 weeks. We made a basic pizza, and boy, I had so much fun. It's a lot of work because I have to do it all myself in my own home, and it's a blast. And I'm just trying to put stuff out there, man, to entertain people. That's all I've done since I was 15 years old. I've been doing this a long, long time, man.
I know, and it's a weird shift to have, you know, something that it's not a war. It's not like something you could see. It's kind of like a faceless, scentless, invisible enemy that we just have to, it's like Mother Earth is punishing us, you know, and it's just crazy how many, you know, lives have been, you know, jeopardized with it. But also, you know, the one thing that I love about creators like yourself, I also see a tremendous amount of new creations, new ideas, new pivots, new ways to entertain people. And, you know, it's kind of exciting to also see that. It's like, we're in this kind of like new frontier in some way where we have to think of new ways to kind of like entertain people for the meantime. You know what I mean? So, you know, like I'm doing a CD release party and it's not a party. It's basic. I've never done an album release without having a gig, you know, tied to it.
Right.
So I'm going to a studio and I decided first I was going to have a band performance, but even having a band performance, it's putting everybody in the band at risk. So I'm like, you know what? Let's just do a solo piano performance. I'm going to videotape it, like professionally, edit it, make it look really good. And on the day of the album release, that's how I'm going to present the record with a live performance. Because that's the only thing I can think of where it's not going to put anybody at risk. It's not going to be a Zoom performance, because you and I both know Zoom performances, they're just not where it's at for me. And I know you feel the same. It's like there's no interaction. There's no kind of like feeling the audience. But at least if you have content where it's like well done or well created, then you feel like you're making something. So one thing I love about your cooking shows, it's so innovative. I mean, one of the things I have to ask you first is, how are you cooking while you're also mastering a puppet? You know, like you're basically
well too. The guy that built my puppet, I asked him to build me puppet hands. So when I have a close up of
my bulldog Otis saying hello.
Oh, I love him so much. Hi, buddy.
Otis. He's coming to say hello.
That's so cute that he just leisurely opened the door and walked in.
He does it every session and he does it every interview. He just like barges in and says, "What's up?" And then stay here for a minute. He gets a scratch and then he walks out. Like, all right, I see everything's cool. I'm all out right. of here. I'll see you in a bit.
Checking. He's so cute. I follow you on everything, and when you post pictures of him, he's just such a cutie pie.
But he won't let me pick him up right now. You want to say hello? You want to say hello to Uncle John? Come here. Well, saying hello. There he is. There.
Look at that face. Oh my God.
He's awesome. Aren't you awesome? Sit for Uncle John. Sit for Uncle John. Sit. He's like, I don't want to do all this. Dude, he's awesome. He high fives. He's a great catch.
He's so cute. He's
funny, man. He really is.
He's so cute. He's only, what, like 3 or 4, yeah?
No, he's going to be 6 in December. Yeah, man. Okay. Crazy. Okay. He's actually, honestly, he makes the whole quarantining thing kind of go by a little bit faster. But
yeah.
You know, just like playing guitar and creating something always helps. But you were saying you had your friend make you puppet hands.
Oh, no, I asked him to, and we just didn't get around to doing it. So the way I figured out how to do the show is I am dressed in a chef outfit as well, and I'm his trusty assistant. So whenever we cut to the actual cooking part, it's my hands and me doing the cooking. He's the boss. He's the head chef who just sits back and admires the kitchen.
But it's so well done. I've seen you make a pizza. You were tossing pizzas.
Well, that was the hardest. You know, I'll tell you, I based that entire show around that one shot. I had that shot in my head. And I said, if I don't do anything in this episode, I have to have the shot where he tosses the dough up in the sky and it doesn't come down. And totally. And if you haven't seen it, you can go to Cook with Alfredo on YouTube, or you can go to Alfredo Pizza Guy on Instagram, and the shows are on there as well. You can follow Alfredo Pizza Guy on Instagram. But anyways, so... And this was my first episode I had filmed, and it was a brand new puppet I wasn't used to performing with.
That's crazy.
So I had literally had a puppet on one hand. I'm laying on my back. My neck is crooked this way, and I had to toss the dough up into the sky and not have it come down.
But it worked. That was a spectacle in and of itself. Stuff. I was like, man, how did he do that? That's crazy.
I got in 3 takes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm sure your family was like, seriously, you're making this much of a mess? And how did you come up with the concept of doing a cooking show with a puppet?
Well, I had been thinking about it for 3 or 4 years, just like a quick little thing. My whole kitchen is decorated, ironically enough, in these ceramic figures that look just like him.
Oh, that's
so when
crazy.
I asked the guy that makes them, I said, can you make this puppet look like all these guys on my wall? And, you know, I have a guy that's holding a bottle of wine. I have a salt and pepper shaker that all look like that character. And he's like, yeah. So, and then what happened was on the ship, I actually put these ventriloquist masks on to audience members. And I do a whole Julio Iglesias, Willie Nelson routine with them. And I got to thinking, once we go back, I guarantee you, for the time being, nobody's going to be allowed on stage with me. And certainly not to be able to place a mask on their face, right, which might have been on somebody else's face the night before.
Right.
So that solidified my decision on, okay, it's going to be costly, but it's time to get this puppet done when this pandemic hit. So about April, May, I started corresponding with the guy that makes them in the DC, Delaware area. And it is what it is, man.
That's awesome. Know, no, but I mean, you know, I was excited to see you come up with something new. It's like,
yeah,
that is kind of like what makes artists so great is in times like this, you're still creating content and
you have to
innovating. You know what I mean? Because it's like,
yeah,
that's what makes it kind of like makes time go by. It's like, oh, okay.
Yep. Yep. And also, you know, I moved to LA for animation voiceover. So once this all happened as well, the voiceover industry completely changed because all the studios are closed. So I had to up my home studio game. I had to get better equipment, better, you know, mixers and processors and microphones. And I actually had to build a booth here in my office. And my last demo, my voiceover demo, is like 20 years old. And I've done a lot of stuff since then.
Right.
So I have nothing but time now. I actually created a new demo as well, which is on my website, johndecrosta.com.
That's awesome.
And I spent some time with my good friend Donna Grillo, and we put it together, and I'm so happy and proud of
you
that
do,
demo.
You do some of the best voices I've ever heard.
Oh, thanks, man. Man.
And you've done movies like Transformers, you've done stuff like Nickelodeon. Give us a couple voices just randomly, because I want to ask you questions about just that process of how you get into voiceover characters.
Well, the most famous thing I've done is I play many characters in Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. I play there's a scene where Shia drops a shard into the kitchen and all the appliances change, the blender and the wall clock and the microwave and the vacuum cleaner, and they chase him through the house. That's all me. That's one of my favorite stories that I have since I've been here for 20 years. That was actually an afterthought. That was thrown at me last second, that scene. The character I got hired for, which was the doctor, is the little silver spider that crawls on top of Shia LaBeouf and tries to cut his brain open, and he says, "We must have the brain on the table." That's the guy I was actually hired for. And then after I finished the doctor sessions, which was like 2-3 hour sessions, Michael Bay looked at me. He was handed a post-it note from the sound guy. He goes, "I guess we're done, man." And the sound guy hands me some more robots. I'm like, "Yeah." So he showed me the scene of the kitchen bots, you know, flying around all over chasing Shy, and he goes, "I need voices for him, and him." And I'm like, "Okay, let's go to work." So the next couple hours we went to work, and I just dubbed all those robots. And it was one of those things where I'm like, this will never stay in the movie. It's just too good to be true. And it's all there. It all stayed in the movie.
And how did you kind of like pick characters or voices for each?
It was just one of those things, you know. I get auditions, you know, every other day, every 2, 3, 4 days I get auditions. And it always is extremely helpful when I get drawings of the characters. Is he fat? Is he thin? Is he old? Is he young? Does he have one tooth? Does he have all his teeth? All those things go into building a character.
Right.
And I just looked at the characters and tried to give them each
personalities
that fit. I mean, right, there's many times where I'll go to an animated feature and I'm like, that's the wrong voice for that character. But a lot of times they'll they'll cast against type. They'll, like, I do a character in an upcoming film that I can't mention. This voice technically should not be coming out of that character, but that's what they wanted, you know? That's awesome. What I gave them.
Well, give me like, do you remember the voices you did for that scene? Give me like a couple.
My favorite thing is, they're chasing him through the house. The blender is the one that's most vocal. He transforms the first, and then he shoots the cereal bowl. It looks like Captain Crunch type of cereal. And he goes, and then he jumps off the stage. And then the vacuum cleaner comes into sight, and you can hear him go. And then there's another guy with big red eyes, and he opens the door, and he looks in and says, wow. I mean, somebody's got to do it.
That's awesome. You know what? It's just like.
The part that Michael Bay loved the most, and I had him laughing on the other side of the glass, and he was covering his mouth so his audio wouldn't bleed into the mic, is as they're chasing Shia down the hallway. I don't know why I did it, but I did. As they're firing at Shia's ankles with all their little guns, I kept going, and Michael loved that. And you can hear it in the movie as they're going down the hallway. You can hear it. And for some reason, dude. I don't know where it came from, but that was his favorite.
Dude, you know what? Like, when did you first start doing voices? I know you've done them for a long time. Zamfir is still one of my all-time favorites, man. That comedy bit and the voice is literally one of my favorite things on the planet. It really is.
I started as a ventriloquist. I started as a ventriloquist in seventh grade. I was here. I have it right sitting on my desk. This is my very first show. I don't know if you can see this.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's my very first show right there. So I've been doing it since then, man. And look, this is a wedding I did when I was in college.
That is awesome. Look at that suit, man. I love it, dude.
I know.
Awesome.
So I started as a ventriloquist when I was a kid, and I was constantly when we had a substitute teacher, it was showtime. They didn't know who I was and that I was the guy that was doing the voices. I would always sit in the back of the room, and you had that one closet in the back of the room that they kept all their magic markers and stuff. You know, other supplies. And I'd be in the back of the room going, "Get me out of here! Get me out of here!" And, you know, they'd be looking around and, "Jesus Christ, let me in!" And that's where it started.
Oh, my God. I'm sure you got tons of laughter just from the students watching a substitute teacher freak out over that.
Hell yes. And because the beauty was they all knew it was me.
Right.
You know?
You know what? Who was the ventriloquist that made you want to do it?
There was actually two. There was many. But the two that that most influenced me was Edgar Bergen, which was – he's like the grandfather of ventriloquists. And ironically enough, as a ventriloquist – he started on radio. Hello.
Wow.
A ventriloquist that started on radio. It makes no sense,
right?
But that's where they started. And he later went on to motion pictures and TV. But Paul Winchell was probably my biggest inspiration. He had two puppets, Danny O'Day and Knucklehead Smith. And, he was on TV. He was also the voice of Tigger.
Oh, nice.
That's Paul Winchell. So he was also the voice of the Dow bathroom, the scrubbing bubbles. Do you remember?
Totally.
We scrub your bathtub so you don't have to. that was Paul, but I think he was the biggest influence as far as Jerry Mahoney. I said Danny O'Day, that was Jimmy Nelson. Jerry Mahoney and Knucklehead Smith. They had a TV show when I was younger on TV. I think it was called the Jerry Mahoney and Knucklehead Smith Show. I don't remember because I was so young, but I remember watching it just being transfixed by these puppets. And I think that's when I really fell in love with puppetry, ventriloquism, you know, silliness. It was just a silly show. Like, and it's also,
it's very animated. It's like,
yeah,
you can kind of like become something totally different from night to night. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
Character is. And it's also like complete tomfoolery, but it's a very disciplined craft, ironically, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Tell me about that process of learning how to, because like everybody tries to, hey, what are you doing on that? You know, like tries to do it. But how did you, were you staring at a mirror and just trying to make sure you didn't make a single movement in your face?
Well, I got my first puppet when I was probably 11 or 12. From Sears and Roebuck, Sears Roebuck and Company from the toy department. And it comes with a little instruction booklet. And the way they teach you when you're first starting back then, I don't know if it's still a part of the process now, but they teach you to put a pencil in your mouth like this. And so you learn how to talk like this without moving your teeth and your tongue. And then slowly you move the pencil out and then you continue to talk like this without moving your mouth.
That's crazy. That is crazy.
And you do use a mirror. Back then, you stand in front of the mirror for hours and hours and hours. And then, you know, after you learn how to do it, then you have to learn the figure manipulation, when to open the mouth. There's a lot of people, like if I'm talking, they'll be opening the mouth like this, which doesn't make sense because it looks like, it's like those old Godzilla movies. Look over there. Exactly. There's Godzilla. I mean, you have to orchestrate. Yeah, exactly. You know, so.
And so did you sit, you had to sit in front of a mirror with the puppet and kind of like do your whole, your shtick.
Yeah. Once you learn the craft, once you learn how to do it, then you have to have the puppet in front of the mirror and you learn different, you know, body of movements where they're pulling away, looking at you, how often do you blink where it's not annoying or obnoxious. Yeah.
That's
absolutely.
And, yeah. You know, and it's such a beautiful, it's like a lost art in some ways, but it's such a disciplined craft because you can really tell the people that are really good from the ones that are just really bad. You know, it's
sure.
I stare at a ventriloquist mouth and like see if there's any movement. And it's so amazing when you see no movement just because I'm a singer too. So your mouth chamber is like your reverb chamber. So every way you manipulate your mouth is how sound is produced. And when you see a mouth not moving at all, but sound is still kind of being produced, it sounds normal. For me as a singer, it's a complete trip. It's like, that doesn't make sense, like physically at all, you know?
Right. And the vents, like Terry Fader, who, you know, he's got his own show in Vegas. The vents that sing, that's a whole nother plateau, man. It's a whole, because you as a singer know the extenuating workout your larynx gets and your diaphragm gets when you're singing. You really have to belt stuff out. When you're just talking, it doesn't take that much effort. But when you're a singing vent, it's a whole nother game, man. Harder, it's different.
Right.
Huh?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like they're flexing. They're like really like.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then when was the like transition that you wanted to do more stand-up comedy? and, you know, maybe just well, do more of that.
From when I was like 12 or 13 to when I was like 17 or 18 years old, it was only ventriloquism. Then when I was 17, 18 years old, I worked at a store at the mall called Spencer Gifts. We all remember Spencer Gifts. They had the black light shop and candles.
They always had like the coolest, weirdest toys and
They're still around.
I've never I haven't seen one in decades, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, they're still around. I think it's just called Spencer's now or Spencer, but they're still around. But I worked there and we had a Christmas party when I was about 17 or 18. And we had a Christmas party and the management made a rule that we were going to have a gong show. We were all going to have to put together a 5-minute act and you get cash prizes just for fun. You know, we wanted some activities to do at the Christmas party instead of just sitting around and drink and eat. Right. You know? So I had already been performing for children's parties and banquets and stuff like that as a ventriloquist. So I took some of that and I wrote my first stand-up routine.
Wow.
On the people that come into Spencer Gifts. The potheads that would come into the black light shop and get freaked out by the posters, the women that would come in for a vibrator and say it's for a friend. I just wrote about Spencer Gifts, and that was my first stand-up act, and I was like 18, 19 years old. And then over the next 5 years, maybe, the ventriloquism got pushed back and out eventually completely, and stand-up just kind of took over. And then the mid-80s, the comedy boom was just giant. It was everywhere. And in 86, I became a full-time comic, and that's all I've done since then.
That's amazing. What kind of comedians did you ever perform with? Because that was a very vibrant time. You had Richard Pryor. You had all these kind of, Rodney Dangerfield still hitting the comedy clubs. Like, who were some of the names that you were just, like, rubbing shoulders with during that time period?
Well, I had the pleasure of being on stage with Robin Williams for about 4.5 minutes. We did some improv together, but I worked for Rodney at Rodney's. And again, going back to our very first opening discussion, Rodney Dangerfield's in New York, Dangerfield's Comedy Club is on the auction block. It's being sold after all these decades, because they just can't swing it, man, because of all this. But, you know, as far as our contemporaries, I worked with Kevin James. I worked with Ray Romano all the time. A lot of these guys, Bill Hicks, I worked with a lot of times. He's a name that your comedy purists would know. Paul Rodriguez, Gilbert Boston. Gottfried. All these guys were in New York, in Boston.
And you saw them kind of like cutting their teeth as well, like – you would Hell see yeah. kind of working on material. That must have been exciting just to see everybody kind of working on new material at that time too, right?
You know, Bill, I just watched a podcast. Bill Burr was on a podcast and he mentioned my name of this crap gig we did. It's this one nighter in upstate New York where he middled for me. And, you know, this is a guy that's obviously he's doing arenas and stuff, for God's sakes. But I remember when Bill had, 15, 20 minutes and he was so shy and very quiet and demure. And now he's amazing. But he mentioned me on a podcast recently. But a lot of these guys started out when I did in the 80s, you know. And so. They weren't the giant stars that they are now, you know?
Do you know what, I went and visited Rodney Dangerfield's tomb, his gravestone. Do you know what is on his gravestone?
No, I don't.
Because I walked up and I did not expect it. And I literally cackled out loud. It says, there goes the neighborhood. I was like, that guy was always funny. And like,
even yeah. Death, where is he buried?
It's in Westwood. It's in Westwood. Oh, Westwood. Right. The same place that Marilyn Monroe is buried as well.
Hollywood Forever.
No, not Hollywood Forever. Oh, it's a small one in Westwood. It's right. It's like, it's really weird. It's like right behind these big, you know, Westwood Plaza buildings and all this
right.
stuff. There's this little drive, and you go in this back area, and it's this private little cemetery, and that's where he's buried, where Marilyn Monroe's buried, and a couple other people. But his was the best I'd ever seen. I was like, oh my God. It was the neighborhood. Who thinks? Just like amazing. It was so funny.
I just saw on social media, I'm trying to think if it was on Facebook. I think a friend of mine on Facebook just posted it yesterday or the day before, and it really hit me because I remember my senior year of high school, one of the biggest there was two big daytime talk shows on, you know, before the days of Oprah. There was two big talk shows, Michael Douglas Show and the Merv Griffin Show.
Right.
And Merv always used to say, and so I signed all my yearbooks. Any of my classmates can open my their yearbook, and my signature will say, "See you on Merv." Because I always dreamt of being on the damn Merv Griffin Show. And his catchphrase, at the end of every segment before they went to commercial, which a lot of people say, but he was known for, "We'll be right back." On his tombstone, it says, "I will not be right back."
Oh, his is there too. His is there too.
Oh,
his
yeah.
is there okay. as well. Yes. His is right next to Rodney's. That's right.
Well, it's funny because if you said, if Marilyn Monroe is there, then Hugh Hefner is right next to her.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. He bought the plot next to Marilyn Monroe.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen your act many times with Joe Nicky, who introduced us.
Uh-huh.
I saw you in Ventura. I saw you used to warm up all of Bill Maher's shows, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, I've seen you kill with 2 minutes, and I've seen you kill with an hour.
Yeah.
Do you have, like, I mean, obviously, there's a preference to have more time, but do you find like there's like a perfect window of time that you feel when you're performing, creating, and making people laugh that you're like, I know this is my window to kind of like take it and hit it and quit it. You know, is there like a 30-minute window? Do you love doing the 60 minutes? Do you love doing the short little, you know, do they all have like an identity of their own that makes it fulfilling for you? Like, how do they all?
Every club is different. Every situation is different. My ideal set is 45 to 55. That's just a beauty window. I can do a lot with most rooms with that window. There is a couple, and I can name them on half a hand, that I love doing an hour and a half. You can't get away with that in some. Like, there's a couple rooms in Vegas. There's one in Florida. At McCurdy's Comedy Club down in Sarasota, Florida, which is where I recorded my last CD, I could go on. I think I was clocked one night at like an hour, like, two hours and seven minutes one night.
Wow.
I mean, you know, when the girls start breaking out the Bissell vacuum cleaners in the back, it's time.
You're like, all right, I'm done. You're giving yourself the light. You're like, all right, that's it.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, it really is an art. Like, you know, I saw you warm up some of the Bill Maher shows, like Politically Incorrect and you know, his other ones. I mean, you wouldn't have that much time, and you would literally kill. I mean, you would slay the crowd. And I was sitting there, and I've seen some of your jokes before, and I would still be laughing because you'd make them new. That's the sign of a great comic. It's like when they can make a joke you've heard before sound new again because of little things that they're adding to it to just you know, heighten it. And I would see you literally kill the audience, and then they'd have to like shush everybody to get into the taping. And it was just like, man, you literally shook the beehive of an audience, and then you would leave. And I was always thinking, like, back then, that has to be a rush just for 2 minutes to come in and just shake the beehive, and then you're good. You're good for like 15 minutes and just chilling until you do it again. But that is not easy to do. That's kind of like walking into an open mic or just doing the first song of a set when, you know, I'm performing as a musician. And that's always the time that is almost like the throwaway, because you're like just getting into the groove of everything.
Sure.
But like, you got in the groove and got out in so little time and slayed. So what is your approach when you, what are you thinking? Are you just kind of having like this knockout Mike Tyson punch out? Like, I'm just going to go in and just destroy and then leave. Do you have like a hit list that you know you're going to give them the greatest hits in 3 minutes? Like, what's your
approach? Without a doubt, without a doubt. When somebody says, come in and just do like 7 to 10. I know what my menu is going to be. I know what's going to hit hard. I know how much time each bit lasts, and I know how to place it down on the order that they're going to go to, where it's going to be a big crescendo, and then goodbye and leave them.
You do that also with an hour set, which, man, I've seen Seinfeld for an hour, and maybe 30 minutes is like crazy. Chappelle too. I love Chappelle. He's like one of the most gifted. And I've seen him, like, he'll explain a joke and then come back and clap you with something. But like, I've seen you literally kill joke after joke after joke after joke for an hour, where I was like, I haven't laughed that hard in ages. You know what I mean?
Oh, thanks, so, man.
No, I and it's like, it's a rarity, man. So like, I always like, when are you going to do a comedy special? I think that's got to be something that's on the you know, horizon, because of everything that's happening now. You know, it's I think it's something that you should consider, because, man, you would kill. You would kill an hour special.
Yeah, I would love to do an on-camera special. I would love to do a DVD or some sort of YouTube show, but it's got to be with a live audience. It's got to be shot well with three cameras, mic'd well with beautiful sound and lighting. And unfortunately, those things aren't in the near future, but hopefully the not too far distant future. And, you know, it's not cheap to do something like that, production like that, but hopefully soon. I know they have Dry Bar Comedy. Hopefully we can get a set for them. You've got to be squeaky clean with Dry Bar. But, you know, never say never. And I've been told for decades that I'm a visual comic. There's a lot of things on my CD where if you just listen to it and haven't ever seen the bit, you're like, what is he doing right now? So, yeah, I would love to do something on camera for sure, without a doubt. You know what?
If I can help facilitate in some way, I will. Because
thanks, man.
You are so long overdue for a comedy special. It's crazy.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And I've seen so many, and, man, it still doesn't measure up. That I remember that we went to a comedy club in Ventura, and it was an hour there, and it's still one of the best hour specials. And it's like those moments where I'm like, man, this, I know every comedian kind of goes through this. It's like, why wasn't this filmed? You know, like, because those nights are just, they come and they go so fast. And it's like all the planets line up for that moment. And, man, it's like when you're on fire like that, that's when you do want to document, and that's what you want the special.
Yep.
And I hope that you do one, because, man, you are a very gifted act. Very gifted ventriloquist, voiceover actor, comedian extraordinaire. Where can people find you, John, if they want to, you know, follow you and all your characters and all the things you're doing? Where can people find you?
Well, you can friend me on Facebook, John DeCrosta, Twitter, John DeCrosta, Instagram, Johnny D163, and Alfredo Fettuccini. You can find him on Instagram at Alfredo Pizza Guy. He's also got a cooking show on YouTube called Cook with Alfredo. I got to figure out how to find that, how to hashtag that so people can find it easier. I haven't gotten that yet, but you can find it. But the same show is posted on his Instagram as well. Okay. And johndecrosta.com. I mean, that's where all my, some really fun pictures that I've taken over the years. And
spell it out because people are dumb.
John DeCrosta, J-O-H-N, DeCrosta, DeCrosta.com. And hopefully when I get comedy dates, they will be posted there.
There will be future dates for you. So don't worry.
Yeah, it's just and you know what?
We'll have to collaborate on some projects. I'm working on an animated thing, so I'd love to pull you in on that.
I love it.
So we'll get you in on all of that. So don't worry, John. Stay the course, man. We will elevate and we will ascend together, my friends. And I want to have you back on the show.
I appreciate that.
When the world calms down again, we're going to have you back, and I want you touring and telling me that you're about to do a comedy special, because
thanks, man. That means a lot. And the feeling's mutual, buddy. I really appreciate and love coming to your shows as well.
Thanks, man.
You know, I saw something today. It just moved me to tears. And I don't know if it was missing live performance, knowing that budgets are being cut in high school music programs or what. But I saw a clip today, Tommy Shaw.
With the youth orchestra. I saw the same thing. So good.
I bawled my eyes out, and I don't know why, where the tears came from. Maybe it was my missing the performance, live performance, seeing talented artists.
It just seemed everything. People working together like the way the world was before.
Yeah, just, man.
Beautiful about that. So, you know, it's going to come back around. So,
yeah.
But I mean, I saw the same performance. We're watching the same things, man. I love it, dude. And you know what? It's the one thing that we have to remember is there's a responsibility for us as artists to keep elevating the world, no matter what the predicament is, whether it's a pandemic, whether it's a war, whether it's whatever. So this is just another one of those things. And man, keep creating, man, because I am watching and I am a huge fan of you, John. So
thank you, buddy. Feelings likewise.
All right. So take care. Stay healthy. Stay inspired. And we'll catch you on the flip side. All right, my friends.
Thank you, pal.
All right. Be good, man.